Our reading this morning is taken from the book of 2 Samuel, chapter 9, reading from verse 1 all the way through. One day, David asked, "Is anyone in Saul's family still alive? Anyone to whom I can show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" He summoned a man named Ziba, who had been one of Saul's servants. "Are you Ziba?" the king asked. "Yes, sir, I am," Ziba replied. The king then asked him, "Is there anyone still alive from Saul's family? If so, I want to show God's kindness to them." Ziba replied, "Yes, one of Jonathan's sons is still alive. He is crippled in both feet." "Where is he?" the king asked. "In Lodabar," Ziba told him, "at the home of Machir, son of Ammiel." So David sent for him and brought him from Machir's home. His name was Mephibosheth. He was Jonathan's son and Saul's grandson. When he came to David, he bowed low to the ground in deep respect. David said, "Greetings, Mephibosheth." Mephibosheth replied, "I am your servant." "Don't be afraid," David said. "I intend to show kindness to you because of my promise to your father, Jonathan. I will give you all the property that once belonged to your grandfather Saul, and you will eat here with me at the king's table." Mephibosheth bowed respectfully and exclaimed, "Who is your servant that you should show such kindness to a dead dog like me?" Then the king summoned Saul's servant Ziba and said, "I have given your master's grandson everything that belonged to Saul and his family. You and your sons and your servants are to farm the land for him to produce food for your master's household. But Mephibosheth, your master's grandson, will eat here at my table." Ziba had 15 sons and 20 servants. Ziba replied, "Yes, my lord, the king, I am your servant, and I will do all that you have commanded." And from that time on, Mephibosheth ate regularly at David's table, like one of the king's own sons. Mephibosheth had a young son named Micah, and from then on, all the members of Ziba's household were Mephibosheth's servants, and Mephibosheth, who was crippled in both feet, lived in Jerusalem and ate regularly at the king's table. And God always blesses the public reading of his infallible and his inspired word.
There are invitations, and then there are invitations that change everything. Like a day in June when I, many years ago, quoted one of Shakespeare's sonnets to my wife. Well, she wasn't my wife then. And I said, "Will you marry me?" And she said, "Yes." And that invitation changed everything. And her response changed everything. Some invitations are polite. Some are expected. Some are easy to ignore. But sometimes an invitation reaches beneath our behavior and it touches our identity. It calls us out of hiding, out of shame, out of limitation, and it names you as wanted, as seen, as known, as loved, and as welcomed. In 2 Samuel chapter 9, we hear such an invitation. David asks a question that is simple, but it is anything but. Is there anyone still alive from Saul's family? If so, I want to show God's kindness to them. This is not a strategy. It is not politics. It is not sentiment. This is covenant kindness. And in that question, if we listen carefully, we begin to hear the whisper of a greater king than David. Is there anyone that I can show kindness to? The Anglican theologian Jim Packer said, if you want to judge how well a person understands Christianity, find out how much they make of the thought of being God's child. And this story is about that truth. We are introduced to a man named Mephibosheth, and everything about him seems marked by loss. He is living in a place called Lodabar, and Lodabar is far more than geography. Lodabar is theology. The word itself means no pasture, no word, no thing, no nourishment, no voice, no future. Lodabar is a place where nothing grows. It is a place of silence and of absence, and yet it is just where he lives. It is not only where he lives, it is also what he believes, because he also carries a name, Mephibosheth, a name that carries the echo of its meaning. From the mouth of shame is one possibility, or the one who dispels shame is another. And so here is a man caught between two identities, the shame spoken over him and the destiny waiting to be revealed through him, living in no thing while carrying the story of shame, hidden, injured because his nurse dropped him, marked permanently by someone else's neglect, impacted by someone else's lack of care. How many women and men sitting here today are impacted by the lack of care of a father? Impacted because somebody dropped you. Maybe not physically, emotionally, relationally, psychologically, and you carry the impact to this day, defined by a fall that you did not choose, an abandonment that was not what you initiated. Henri Nouwen says, self-rejection is the greatest enemy of the spiritual life because it contradicts the sacred voice that calls us beloved. And Lodabar is where self-rejection settles. Lodabar says, you are forgotten, you are disqualified, and you are finished. But grace never consults your location before it comes looking for you. David does something extraordinary in this song. He sends for Mephibosheth. He doesn't wait. He doesn't demand. He initiates. Grace always moves first. Don't be afraid, David says to him as he comes into the king's presence. I intend to show kindness to you. And then we have the key line. Because of my promise to your father, Jonathan. This moment is not based on Mephibosheth's goodness. It is not based on his merit. It is based on David's promise to his father. He is invited because of a promise that he did not make, but now he gets to live inside the blessing of that promise. Karl Barth said, the gospel is the declaration that God is for us. Floyd McClung, whose book, The Father Heart of God, is one of the most remarkable on God's tender love toward his children, says the Father's love is the starting point of the Christian life. Everything else flows from it. And you are all invited today. You are not invited because of what you have done. You are invited because of what Christ has done. And when you say yes to his invitation, shame is lifted from you. When Mephibosheth arrives, he bows low and he says, "What is your servant that you should show kindness to a dead dog like me?" This is not humility. This is not a sense of right understanding. This is shame speaking. Because shame will exaggerate your unworthiness. Shame rewrites your identity. Shame summarizes your story in its worst moment. And it forces you to live there with the deep regret of a word you wish you hadn't spoken, or an action that you wish you hadn't taken, or a response that you wish you had not made. And instead of seeing the greater life around you, defined you by that one single point of failure. When my nephew took his own life in 2014, he was 25. When his father, brokenhearted, took his own life 18 weeks later, broken by the pain of what he had gone through, he was 55. And I said to my sister, I conducted both of their funerals, do not define their lives by one decision. Do not let 25 years or 55 years of living be condensed to one fatal wrong decision. Remember them as the man that you loved, the son that you bore. Remember the good things that they did. Remember all the joy that they brought to your life. And when you use their name, use it smiling. And so my wife and I and my nephew's cousins, our children, and the rest of my family use their names. We are not ashamed of them. We refuse to live in shame because of choices that they made. We do not need to be defined by the single acts of failure that so many others define us by. You are not just your worst moment. Martin Luther said, "The love of God does not only find, it creates. And it births that which is pleasing to it." But shame says, "I must become pleasing before I can be loved." God says, "You are loved, and I will make you into something new." The Anglican charismatic theologian Tom Smeal, in a book which deeply impacted me called The Forgotten Father, said many Christians remain unsure of the Father's love, living as though acceptance must still be earned rather than received. We buy, but we don't belong. We serve, but we do not rest. We come close, but we never sit down. And yet King David does not correct Mephibosheth harshly. He doesn't argue with his language. He doesn't correct him when Mephibosheth says, "I am a dead dog." David simply gives him a new life. He gives him a new description of himself. And out of that grows a change in our hearts and in our lives. David restores everything to this man. Land, provision, legacy. But then he says something even more powerful. He says, "You will eat here with me at the king's table." That's not charity, it is adoption language. Mephibosheth is not a project to be fixed. He is a person to be embraced. He is not simply tolerated in the presence of King David. He is seated at the table of the king. And the text flows down and repeats itself so that we don't miss it. Mephibosheth ate regularly at David's table and listened to the next line, like one of the king's own sons. Like one of the king's own daughters. Like one of the king's own sons. Like one of the king's own daughters. Like one of the king's own sons. James Torrance, the Scottish theologian, said, God's love is not something we achieve. It is something into which we are included. And the American ex-priest Brennan Manning said, define yourself radically as one who is beloved by God. This is who Mephibosheth becomes. Not the man from Lodabar, not the man of shame, but a son at the table of the king. And there is something beautiful about this table, because it is where grace covers what others describe as broken. Mephibosheth is still lame in both feet. The miracle is not in his legs. The miracle is in his location. Because at the table, his weakness is covered. His shame is hidden. And his identity is redefined. The table lifts him. It raises him to equality with the sons of David. A.W. Tozer said, what comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. If you think God tolerates you, then you will sit cautiously. But if you know that God delights in you, then you will sit freely. You will smile and you will laugh and you will feel secure and you will not need to pretend. You will not try to earn anything from him. At the table, Mephibosheth is no longer introduced by his brokenness. He is recognized because he belongs there. And he belongs there because the king said he could sit at that table. Here in the United Kingdom, we need to recognize something. This story is not just an ancient one. It is painfully modern. Because across our nation and across our world, there are millions of people living without the presence of a father. In the UK alone, around 1 in 5 children grow up without a father figure at home. That represents millions of lives that are shaped by absence, not by presence. And the research consistently shows that this absence often carries consequences. Children growing up without a father are statistically more likely to experience emotional and mental health challenges, lower academic achievement and school engagement, poverty and long-time economic disadvantage, and greater involvement in crime or in the justice system. And some studies suggest that 76% of young men in prison grew up without the presence of a father. Father absence is linked with higher depression across absence, adolescence, and adulthood. Now, let me say something which I think is particularly important. In my role as a pastor for the last 40 years, I have seen that trend bucked by single mothers who have loved their sons and daughters ferociously, who have invested in them. I've watched women in our churches work 2, 3, 4, and 5 jobs, bringing to their children a sense of identity. And one of the things that I've watched those single mothers do again and again and again and again and again is lift their children into the presence of their heavenly father and show them that even though their physical father may be absent, or difficult. They have a Father who is perfect, who loves them and sees them and knows them. And if you are a single mother here today, online or in this space, if you have had to have that fight, if you are a child that was brought up by a mother who loved you ferociously and showed you the love of God the Father in her actions, I want to say to those mothers, I want to say to every single mother that has brought up children, well done. Well done for your faithfulness. Well done for your resilience. Well done for your determination. Well done for your courage. Well done for your self-sacrifice. But maybe under all of that, there are those that still say, but I need a father. This isn't about blaming single mothers. We so often see extraordinary strength and resilience in single parent families. This is not about shaming families. This is about the biblical reality that fatherhood matters. Presence matters. Affirmation matters. A voice at the table matters, because when our father is absent, something in the human heart can begin to ask, am I wanted? Do I belong? Is there a place for me? And that question is exactly the question Mephibosheth is carrying when David calls his name. And this is where the gospel meets the ache. Because whatever your story, whether your earthly father was absent or distant or inconsistent or even present but unable to give you what you needed, there is a deeper truth. None of us are fatherless. Tom Smeal again, to discover God as Father is to discover that we are not spiritual orphans. We are welcomed children. Floyd McClung says the deepest cry of the human heart is for a father's love. And here is the good news. What you do not receive on earth is not withheld in heaven. The father you needed is the father who is calling you. Not to judge you, but to not to measure you, but to forgive you and to seat you at his table. On this Father's Day, David gives us a picture. He remembers covenant. He initiates kindness. He lifts the broken. He makes space. Fathers, this is the call to you. Not perfection, but reflection. I have been a father of 4 children on earth and then a 5th that came to us when he was 16. I am a father to 2 children that I have never met, and I look forward to meeting them one day in heaven. And I have failed all of my children. I've got it wrong. I've let them down. I'd love to be able to be the pastor and the preacher and the man who stands before you perfect, radiant in his Adonis-like anointing, saying, I've never said a wrong word. I've never got anything wrong. I've never made mistakes. But I would be telling you lies. But in the depth of my heart, I want to reflect the Father to my children. I want them to know that there is a better Father than me, that there is a more faithful Father than me. So I am quick to apologize to my children for my mistakes, something the generation before me seemed much less willing to do. I'm quick to identify where I have got it wrong. And I have found that when I say to my children, I'm sorry, they do something in their heart is changed and a deeper and more solid union is established. And I can stand before you today without arrogance, but in honesty, and say that my closest friends on earth are my wife and my children. I turn to them for advice and guidance. I talk to them regularly. I still get it wrong. I still make mistakes. Now, dads, if you think, gosh, this is a tough season, but it'll get easier.
I've got a bit of news for you. Even when your children are 32 and 33 and 34, when they're married and they have their children, they still need you. Sometimes they ring you and you're just about to enjoy a lovely Chinese. You've ordered it and it's sitting and the steam is rising from the noodles. You can smell it in your nostrils. And they say, Dad, have you got a minute? And you smile and say, okay. Sometimes when they're teenagers, you're walking the stairs to go to bed and they emerge from their rooms and sit and say, can I talk? And you are there until 4 a.m. Matches in your eyelids, trying to keep yourself awake as you listen to them. But listen, if you choose when you talk to your children and you only talk to them when it suits you, when they grow up, they will not talk to you. The duty of fatherhood is when your kids say, I need you, you say, I am here. And sometimes you'll get it wrong, but there is a God, fellas, who can give you grace and strength. And for those of you that are planning to become fathers or are awaiting the birth of a child, that will be one of your primary callings. Never sacrifice your children on the altar of your ministry. Never sacrifice them on the altar of your career. I promise you, brothers, you will not get to the end of your life and say, I wish I had spent more time at the office. No one ever says that. If you are a preacher, fellas, you will not get to the end of your life and say, I wish I'd spent more time in the ministry. If God entrusts a child to you, it is your ministry. It is your ministry to love them and to serve them and to embrace them and to walk with them. On this Father's Day, God has given us a perfect picture. And N.T. Wright says, the church is to model what it looks like when love, not fear, governs relationships. And our homes are where that begins. Because a child who knows that they have a place at your table will find it easier to believe that they have a place at God's. I did not know that growing up. And when I became a follower of Jesus, I ran toward this invitation. Not because I understood it, but because deep in my heart I knew I needed it. But I know many who have run from it because they have been afraid of the idea or the picture of God as Father. But today, the gospel not only offers forgiveness, it offers an invitation. John Stott said, the essence of sin is we substitute ourselves for God. But the essence of salvation is God substitutes himself for us. To the invitation stands. To the weary, to the shamed, to the forgotten, come. You do not need to fix yourself. You do not need to prove yourself worthy. The Father is not waiting for you to become whole. He is inviting you whilst you are still wounded. The table is set. The seat is ready. Your name is known. There are invitations. And then there are invitations. And this is the most important invitation that you will ever receive. Come to the Father who has set a place for you. Thank you.